ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா, வெல்கம், ஜெய ஜெகநாத். So I thought about talk about Lord Jagannath today. This is a significant year in the life, the Leela, the manifested pastimes of Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the universe. The title of my talk is The Original Juggernaut, Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the universe. So Jagan, or the root Jagat, means the universe, and Nath is the Lord. So that's the Lord of the universe, and that's what he is commonly called. Who is he? Well, we know he's God, but which manifestation of God is he specifically? He's Krishna. That's who he is. But he's Krishna in a particular manifestation of Krishna, which upon first glance, you may not recognize as Krishna. He's the gentleman here on the left with the black face. This is his older brother Balaram on the right with the white face. And this is their younger sister Subhadra Devi in the middle, getting protected by the brothers, with the golden complexion. So you can see it's a, I guess we call it a multiracial family nowadays. Multi-ethnic experience. Because there's no, I mean, after all, God creates everybody, doesn't he? So he's kind of setting the standard right here, isn't he? So what's done in Vaishnavism, which is a particular practice of yoga that we practice, bhakti yoga. Vaishnava means a follower of Vishnu. Vishnu and Krishna, same thing, God. It's commonly accepted or done what's called deity worship. So there's the altar. The deities are on the altar in whatever form they might be. This is the Panchatattva, the five deities associated with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came down to earth 500 years ago. And to serve the deity, the representation of God in deity form, or statue form, picture form, whatever it may be, enables us to do what? It enables us to, number one, meditate on God, to provide service to God. Commonly in Christianity, we would pray. Prayer is accepted, of course, as one of the methods of approaching God. If you go to a Catholic church, you may light a candle. You may genuflect. You may light a candle. So that's kind of what you do. Maybe you'd make a donation. So here it's a little bit more involved, in the sense that we learn how to look after Krishna in deity form. Well, what value would this have? Well, firstly, you're serving God. You might say, no, I'm not. I'm serving a statue or a representation. Yes, but God is also accepting your service, your love, your devotion through that process. This is not a process that we as humans have developed or invented. It's a process that occurs or is presented to us in the Vedas, books of knowledge, going back millennia. And this written in the Sanskrit language. This is one of the methods of devotional service, one of the nine methods of serving God. It all sounds very nice. You can offer, make a garland, offer him a garland, offer food, which is prasadam, offer arti, incense, flowers, many things. It all sounds nice. Does it work? If it doesn't work, then it just sounds nice. Well, it does work. It depends on your level of sincerity. It depends on the depth of your faith. Well, you may say, I don't have much faith. I'm a little, it's a little foreign to me. But if you're open-minded enough, and if you approach it with that attitude, the faith actually will develop through the process of deity worship. How is it that God could accept your service, your love, your devotion in an inanimate form, such as a deity made out of wood or metal or a painting? How? Because God is God, and He's unlimited, and He can accept, He can take any form, He can represent Himself in any form, and He can accept your love and your offering in any form. So we cannot think in terms of limitation when it comes to God. We can think in terms of limitation when it comes to us, if you like, but not when it comes to God. So it's commonly expressed in the Vedic tradition that deity worship, you can go all over India, there's all kinds of temples, and deity worship is going on. I guess we might say in the Catholic Church there's Eucharist worship, isn't there, in that sense? Eucharist is a representation of God. Okay, so the story of Jagannath. Why on earth, would he take these forms? What went wrong? What happened? Who made a mistake? Who messed up? That's why I say, we think we're controlling this and that. When it comes to God, that's an illusion. When it becomes you and material energy, and you think you're controlling stuff, okay, good. Knock yourself out. But when God's involved, it's a different story. So back in Satya Yuga, Satya Yuga, Golden Age. We are in Kali Yuga now, Iron Age. How many ages in the universe? Four ages. Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, Iron Age. The seasons of the universe. And we're in the cold winter, my friends, the cold winter of Kali. That's what we're in. When the consciousness takes a nosedive and people become more materialistic. No. You think? And they become less inclined to spirituality. They become less inclined to truth. Prabhupada called Kali Yuga the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. And that's what the Vedas say. See? So Satya Yuga was many, many years ago. How long is the Mahayuga? It's what, 3 million years?
4,320,000.
Mahayuga. Four ages taken together. Gold and silver, bronze, and iron. Four million. 4,320,000. That's a lot of years. So when was Satya Yuga, the Golden Age? We're just starting Kali, the age of Kali now. So when was Satya Yuga? Oh, long time ago. Ram was here in Treta Yuga 2 million years ago. So Satya Yuga, the Golden Age, which is the longest one of them all, was way back. So this story is set in Satya Yuga. This is primarily from... there's different versions of the story. It's pretty much essentially the same. Some of the details are different. This version is from the Skanda Purana. Purana means history. And there was a king living in kind of the middle part of India, Avanti. And his name was Indradyumna. And he had a wife. And her name was Gundicha Devi. And they were the king and the queen. And they were very pious souls. They were very close to God. And very conscious, conscientious, gave in charity. Every day would pray and worship God. And we're hoping to be liberated ultimately from the cycle of repeated birth and death. So the king was admired and respected by his people because he actually took care of them, which is kind of hard to find nowadays. So there were some travelers that came through his town, Avanti, and they had spoke to one of his servants and mentioned that there was this absolutely beautiful deity of Vishnu, of God, far from here. And he was the most spectacular deity of Vishnu you will ever see. He had a temple someplace. And if you would go and you would see this deity, just the darshan, just the vision of this deity would mean that you would never take birth again. You would be free just by the vision of this deity, the darshan. Well, the king was so taken by this because he was a very devoted soul. So he said, I must see this deity. I must go to this temple. Where did he say the deity was? He said, I don't know. He left. He didn't say where it was. Well, the king immediately organized four search parties to go out in the four directions in India and find this temple with this deity of Nila Madhava, of Vishnu. So that was done. He gave them 3 months. Come back in 3 months' time and report back to me. The guy that went east was the son of his minister. His name was Vidyapati, very clever young guy, good looking guy. And he went east. In 3 months, the other parties returned, north, south, west. They returned and came up with nothing. Couldn't find the deity. But Vidyapati had gone east toward the Indian Ocean. And he went to this village that was, the people were amazing. Very God conscious and very gentle, very loving. There's just an energy and aura about the place. And he said, I'm looking for a deity. And, then you must talk to Vishvavasu. He's the head man of the village. And so he met him. He wasn't a high-born Brahmin, or, you know, he wasn't from that level of society. He was a simple man. But he was very well respected. He was very devotional. He was very intelligent. And he went to his house. He wasn't there. His daughter was there. His daughter was about 16, very beautiful. Lalita was her name. And there's the most amazing fragrance in her little house. Just amazing. And she said, he said, I'm here to see your father, and I'm trying to find this temple. She says, well, just wait here. My father will be here later. So at the end of the day, he came back. This guy was amazing. And the fragrance became even more beautiful when he walked in the door. Just a transcendental soul. So he stayed there for some time. And every day, Vishvavasu would leave in the morning, and he'd come back in the evening. And his daughter was serving Vidyapati, who was looking for the deity, serving him because her father, look after him, give him what he needs. But every day he'd disappear. And so he said, well, what? And at the same time, Vidyapati, he would go and try to find the deity somewhere. You know, he'd go during the day, come back in the evening. He says, where does your father go every day? Oh, I can't tell. It's a secret. It's a secret. My father wouldn't forgive me. He doesn't want anybody to know. Well, he goes to worship some deity, or yes, he does. He does. But can't tell you anything. Well, then he got real curious. Well, I must be this close to finding out. And he married the girl over time. He was there a while. He asked for her hand. The father says, yes, you're a good soul. You can have my daughter's hand in marriage. So now it was his wife. Now you got to tell me the secret. I mean, she says, no, I must not tell you. Wait a second, you're my wife. You have to tell me. So finally, he got it out of her that his dad, her father, would go every morning somewhere deep into the forest. There was an old temple, and in that temple was a deity called Nilamadava. And it is the most amazing deity. And the father didn't want it to be revealed because he was afraid some king would come and take the deity away and build a big temple and he'd never see it again. So there was a little wisdom in that thought. So it so happened, it transpired that he didn't see the deity. He immediately said, I have to leave and go back to where I came from, Avanti, and tell my king, Indrajumna, I have found the deity, because I've been gone now 6 months. So that's what actually happened, that there was the king looking for the deity. So he goes back, he tells the king. The king is thrilled. And what does the king want to do? He wraps up his kingdom, everything, everybody, lock, stock, and barrel, and he moves some east to the Indian Ocean. Now they're going to find the deity. And I guess I forgot to mention that he did take Vidyapati to see the deity, but he put him a disguise on him so he wouldn't know where, and he took him on a circuitous path through the forest. And then he took the blindfold off him and he showed him the deity, and the deity was magnificent. But what he did on the way was his wife gave him some mustard seeds, and he quietly, surreptitiously dropped mustard seeds all along the way, thinking that when he came back in a few months he'd have these bright yellow flowers, the mustard seed plants would have bloomed. Was not to be. Because when he went back, the king wrapped it all up. He took the whole kingdom and off they went to see this deity and establish a temple. And when they got there, everything was gone. The village was gone. The hill, there was a hill there, that was gone. The temple was gone, it was all gone. It disappeared. Well, King Indrajumna was absolutely devastated. And now here, on the verge of seeing this deity and fulfilling my life, and seeing the deity and never having to take birth again, this has happened. This is such a tragedy. So, all is not lost. In a dream, Vishnu appeared to him and said, don't worry. I know you didn't get your heart's desire to see me in this deity form, but I wanted you to come here because I do want you to build a temple, but not with this deity. I have a different deity form. So I want you to go to this place in India, which is now Puri, Orissa. And I want you to, you will find a crimson neem log floating in the ocean. Neem is a particular kind of tree, if you don't know that. You'll find that floating in the sea. And you bring that, and from that log, deities will be carved. And so that's what he did. And he was thrilled. Well, he got the stream, and sure enough, they went there. He again relocated the rest of the kingdom. He brought everybody with him. And they found the neem log, crimson in color, floating in the ocean right near the shore. And originally they couldn't budge it, which is typical of stories about Jagannath. Sometimes when he's on the Ratiyatra chariot for the Jagannath festival, the Ratiyatra festival, the chariot, even as they pull it, it stops. And no matter what they do, no matter push, pull, whatever, it won't move. This is quite common. Many stories of this. So they couldn't budge the log that was in the water, if you can imagine that. It should be able to move quite easily in the water. Until Vishvavasu, the father, Lalita, his daughter, and Vidyapati, her husband, they went into the water and they were easily able to move the log. Log was brought to the kingdom which Indrajumna had established. And in another dream, Vishnu or Krishna said to Indrajumna, now you will carve it into four forms. The same tree, four deity forms. You establish the deity in the temple, and then everything will be perfect, and you'll get your wishes. So, many shilpis or sculptors came that wanted to sculpt the deities. And there was to be a deity of Krishna, a deity of his brother Balaram, a deity of Subhadra, the sister, and the Sudarshan Chakra. Vishnu has in his hands Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. He has four things. Typically in the Vishnu form. You won't see them all here in this form. But he has the conch shell, shankha, chakra. The chakra is like a chakra, like a disc that he throws. Sudarshan chakra, it's called. Gada means the club. And a padma, lotus flower. So these, if somebody with four arms and a bluish hue appears to you in your dreams or face to face, and he's got those four things in his hands, you'll know God has arrived. Okay? So that's a heads up for you. So look out for that. Just as effective in the dream as it is in real life. We cannot never minimize the dream. So that's what he wanted carved. And many shilpis came and they were trying to carve on this log and they break their tools. Like I say, if you aren't the man for the job, there's no way you're going to be carving anything for God unless he gives you the green light. So finally, this old ancient guy came in, you know, stooped over, he's barely moving. Tools. I will carve your deity. Look at him, you're thinking, well, this guy might drop dead any day. You know, he's pretty old. Yes, I've been sent. I will carve. Okay, all right. I guess maybe you're the guy. What they did not know was Vishnu himself in the form of this shilpi sculptor. So he said, there is one condition. It will take me 21 days to carve these murtis, these deities. During that time, I will be in the room carving. This door will be closed. No one must open the door while I am carving the deities. Before 21 days. If anyone should open the door to disturb me or to check on my progress, I will immediately stop and I will go away. Now, there's a couple of versions of how this went down. I'm going to tell you the one that I like. For 2 weeks, this is Skanda Purana version. For 2 weeks, not a sound. Not a sound the whole time. The queen, Gundacha, husband, we must check. Something's wrong. I hear no ting, ting, ting. Doesn't sound like he's carving anything. Listening at the door. What if something happened to him? And her husband, the king, well, what do you mean? Well, he's old. He could be dead in there. He's never sent for any food. He's probably starving. The king says yes, but he says, do not open. Do not open the door. For any reason, at any cost. So, finally the queen, being a little bit emotionally overwrought, as sometimes women may be, she insisted they open the door, make sure he was okay. I opened the door, and he said, why are you entering now? Well, we never heard anything. You agreed. 21 days. Now you've gone against our agreement. I am done. I am finished. I will take my tools and I will go. And he left. And what remained? Were these shapes, these forms, modern day forms associated with Lord Jagannath. Now, these are not exactly the best example of a human form that you've seen when you've looked at sculptures and likenesses of the human form. Like, you know, Michelangelo or somebody like this. So, what's the deal here? Jagannath is universally known because he's the Lord of the universe. And when you see Jagannath, everybody smiles. It's a very strange form. It's a different form. But everybody loves this form. And there's a universal recognition. Why did he want to take that form? I don't know. That's the form he took. And he orchestrated the whole thing so that the carving wasn't finished, and this is what we were left with, and then subsequently they've been painted in this way. Since when? Satya Yuga. A few million years. This has been going on. So the king, initially disappointed, had another dream in which Krishna told him, don't be upset. These are the forms I wanted. You go ahead, have them painted, and install them on the altar in your temple, and I will accept worship through these forms and service. So that's what's been going on. And then he has now been doing, well, even since back then, the Leela of the Chariot Festival, where he goes off and it's a leela, so you have to understand. He so-called catches a cold during Snana Yatra, because he gets a chill because they're bathing him in the Abhishek, and then he has to go recuperate. He has to get some sea air, and the sea is right nearby in Puri, so they have to put him in a chariot, in a suitable vehicle, and take him down First of all, they take him to the Gundicha temples, before that he goes into kind of quarantine for 2 weeks where Lakshmi takes care of him, and then he goes to the Gundicha temple. So all of this is his Leela, and the beautiful Rath Yatra ceremony with the chariots is now done in pretty much every major city. In India, as far as I know, it's definitely done in Jagannath Puri. I don't know if there's more cities now. That Prabhupada has probably established it in other cities. And do they do it in Delhi or no? Yeah, but in the Western countries, it's all over now. It's being done in every major city, almost, in America, in Canada, in South America, Central America, here, UK, Europe. It's everywhere now.
London last week.
So that's Jagannath's intention. It's interesting that it's been spread in Kali Yuga. And since then, or before then, it was only ever done in Satya Yuga, in Indradyumna's temple, Jagannath Puri, where it is still done today. Try to imagine that. That's a couple million years ago. And here I thought man descended from apes rather recently. That's one version of the story. So, what I was going to tell you about was the Navakalevara. Jagannath, Krishna in this form as Jagannath, he acts more like a human and interacts with his devotees and his worshippers and whoever, you know, has a relationship with him in the most human way among all of the different manifestations of God or the deity form. He even so-called dies. And how does he die? I mean, God doesn't die because God's God and he's eternal. Whereas we're eternal, we're souls, but these bodies actually die. And we have to take another body. So he sort of plays out this Leela of death and rebirth in the form of Jagannath. And in what way does he do that? Well, according to the Shilpa Shastra, the Vedic books on sculpture and art, deities are made from various materials, so therefore they will have a limited lifespan before they wear out. So deities made of gemstones can last up to 10,000 years. Deities, murtis made of metal, 1,000 years. Deities made of wood, 12 years. Deities that are paintings, you know, any representation of God in a painting that you actually worship, put it on your altar, 1 year. And deities made of earth or clay, you can fashion, 1 month. So that's what it's stated in Shilpa Shastra. So Jagannath is made out of wood. And every 12 years, roughly, the deity wears out. It gets old and worn. It's wood. Because they worship the deity every day, all day long, and they're putting garlands on him, and they're doing this, and they're doing that, and they're taking him on the Rath Yatra chariot, and they're, you know, they're doing lots of stuff. They're quite busy. They love their deity form of Jagannath in Orissa. So he then takes another body, and that's called Kalevara, the Daru Brahman. The Nava Kalevara. Kalevara is body and Nava is new. So, Daru means wood And Brahman means spirit. So this is God in the form of wood, Daru Brahman. So what they have to do after 12 years is they have to find another manifestation of wood through a tree and select it and bury the existing one and prepare the new one. So this happens roughly every 12 years. When does it happen? The Vedic month of Ashadha is mid-June to mid-July. And if there is what they call double Ashad, when there's a full moon that occurs twice within the 29-day period, that's the special time. And that month is then called Purushottam, or Supreme Person. That is a very favorable and auspicious month. That's now. So at that time, they go to the forest, the Daityapatis. They are descendants of Vishvavasu. They go to the forest and they select wood, a tree. In the Brihat Sangita, it says, worshippers of wooden deities are blessed with long life, beauty, strength, and victory. So historically, in many cultures, specific trees and plants have been worshipped and considered sacred for millennia. Correct? It's not only in India. In the Vedic tradition, sacred trees or plants are neem, tulsi, the banyan, peepal, bale, amla. Here in Ireland, we have the greatest remaining remnants of the Druidic tradition, the Druids, the ancient Druidic priests, who were here when? In the Neolithic era. Long time ago. When's the Neolithic era? Between 10,000 BCE and 2000 BCE. Who was on the planet then? Krishna was on the planet then, coincidentally. And the Druids have all kinds of stone circles and dolmens in cairns and various kinds of remnants, like the Neolithic tomb at Newgrange, right? So the Druids, what do they worship? They worship the oak, the yew, the birch, and what's this? The real sacred one? Mistletoe. Mistletoe, which grows upon an oak. And they harvest it from the oak with a sickle that they cut it down with. That is the sacred plant for the Druids. Why is that of any interest to us? Because it is, in a sense, carries the same symbolism as the lotus does in yoga culture or Vedic culture. The lotus is the symbol. Vishnu holds a lotus. Why does he hold a lotus? There's many beautiful flowers. The gods appear upon a lotus. The goddesses always appear on a lotus. Because the lotus grows from the mud, in the water, throws its stem up. Stem comes out of the water, or a lily pad, lotus pad, on the water. Stem keeps growing, and then the flower opens. The flower is of the earth, but never touches the earth. That's why lotus is a symbol of transcendence. And the mistletoe is not growing from the ground, it's growing from the air sitting upon the oak tree. So it too is a symbol of transcendence. for the Druids. So I'm just giving you those examples to see that there is a connection. Many civilizations would have worshipped plants or trees. So, who picked the neem tree?
Chaitanya.
No, Vishnu picked the neem tree for Jagannath. This predates Lord Chaitanya. So God himself selected the neem tree. Why? Its medicinal value is well documented. Neem can cure all kinds of stuff. It even has the potency to purify the area around which it is found, around which it grows. And it has a very bitter taste. Meaning, well, why would that be good? Because all the pests and the insects stay away from it. They don't like it. It doesn't become infested. Insects avoid it. Paradoxically, when the tree gets old, because that's when you want it, for the deity form, it begins to secrete, its secretions begin to taste sweet, not bitter. And it begins to emit a smell of sandalwood when it gets old. So it sort of changes its presentation as it gets older. As it ages, its thickened rough bark cracks into recognizable shapes of the conch, the chakra, the lotus, and the club, which can easily be seen and recognized in the bark of the old tree. They grow up to 150 years old, somewhere around there. So this is how they're selected, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Yes, Lord Chaitanya was born under a neem tree. So yes, he selected that. And what was his nickname because he was born under a neem tree?
Nemai.
Seems to be a favorite of Vishnu and his manifestations. In the Bhavishya Purana, it says the neem is worthy of worship by all. So every 12 years, they bury the existing Jagannath deities. But before they do that, they send out the parties to look for the chosen trees that will become the deities. Do you just go out haphazardly? Oh, well, here, pick this one, pick that. No. Doesn't work like that. So this happens usually in the month Double Ashad, which is now, this year, and that's why they are doing the Navakalevara. They're changing the Jagannath deities this year. In fact, they've been doing it the last few months. So he's coming out in his new presentation form for the Rath Yatra next month, July. So here's a couple things that I think are interesting, you might find interesting. When they go out and they're busy selecting the deity, they go to, only the Daityapatis are allowed to do this, and they have been for millennia. They take very little food. They have to be in a pure state of mind because they're trying to replace the deity, so they have to be in the right frame of mind. First they go to a temple called Mangala Devi, a Mangala Devi temple. Then they pray, they decorate the deity, they worship the deity, then they chant this mantra, the Swapnavati mantra. Swapna means dream. And they chant this mantra 108 times late at night. Then they go to sleep. There's the main Daityapati and his associates, his helpers. And in the dream, Mangala Devi tells them where to go to look for the tree, which direction to go. Sometimes a flower will fall off the deity in a certain direction, and then they will go in that direction. So they get the dream every time. The next morning, they set off. Now, they're looking for, nowadays, they're looking for four different trees. A Sudarshan Chakra tree, a Balaram tree, Subhadra tree, and the main man, a Jagannath tree. They do it in that order. So what are some of the things that they look for, some of the natural features in the area that will tell them or lead them to the tree, and that they will know for certain that they are choosing the right tree? The color of the tree must be black or crimson. The trunk should be straight, handsomely attractive, and be 10.5 meters to 20 meters. It has to have more than four main branches, four or more. There should be a river nearby or a pond. This is a whole list. There should be a what do you call the burning ghat? A funeral place or a burning ghat where they burn the bodies. What's it called? No, this is a little different in India. It's called something ghat. I can't think of the name right now. Yeah, that's it's a different name. There should be a Shiva temple nearby. Some manifestation of Shiva. The tree must have no nests on any branches. The tree must not be infested with any kind of insects or anything like that. It must have no parasite, no creepers. You have a hard time here with the ivy ivy going up the trees. And not have been struck by lightning. In other words, no injuries. There must be an anthill at the foot of the tree. I hope you're taking notes, because you're going to go out and start looking later. There must be a snake or snakes guarding the tree. Generally, those are cobras. On the body of the tree itself must be a symbol like the conch or the lotus or the chakra. Must be. It must be, there must be a monastery or a mutt nearby where holy spiritual people live. And then it goes on. So those are some of the ideas. Some of the stipulations. Okay, so in 1996, he's given some examples of some the trees they found in 1996. There was a neem tree that was about 43 years old that they was growing somewhere in that area. And the property itself was owned by this person. And but he was just a simple man, and he was having financial problems. So he decided he would sell the tree. And they can come along and cut the tree down, take the wood, and, you know, and he'd make a profit and So when he said that he decided he would sell the tree, many, many buyers showed up to buy the tree. Of course, the one that would pay the most money would be the possessor of the tree. And so that it was, the person came, the buyer paid in advance after considerable negotiations. Well, if you've been to India, you know that's a fact. And so to celebrate the sale, they organized a feast. And the cooking was almost done when something very miraculous happened. Two snakes appeared from nowhere, appeared on the spot, and coiled themselves right there as if nothing was going on there, as if there wasn't a bunch of people there. Because there was a bunch of people. And he says, initially we did not give much importance to their presence, presuming that the innocent creatures would go slide away. And we thought it unwise to challenge the snakes or to try to harm them. Within 10 minutes, the entire neem tree began to shake and vibrate. But there was no wind. There was no storm. And as if by a powerful gust of wind, but there was no wind. This instantaneous phenomenon attracted our attention. And all of a sudden, there were hundreds and hundreds of cobras hanging from the branches of the tree. It was covered in cobras. And we were very frightened and thought we must have committed some serious offense. And they all bowed down, did the pranams, got down on the ground and asked for forgiveness. What did we do? In fact, this tree was Sudarshan Chakra tree. That's what it was for. So, and that's what it was going to be used for. So somehow they came to that understanding, and the sale, the deal was off. Balaram, Krishna's brother, takes the form of the serpent couch when Vishnu lies on the ocean of Garbhadak Ocean, or the Mahavishnu, what's the Karnadak Ocean, when he creates material world. So Balaram takes the form of the serpent couch, as does Sudarshan Chakra, is also a form of Balaram. So that particular tree was meant for the Sudarshan Chakra. When they chose a tree for Lord Balaram, they found a female cobra was sitting upon the branch. There was an anthill at the foot of the tree where people had seen snakes living in the anthill. Close by was the temple of Utreshwar Mahadev of Shiva. And there was a river not far away. It was one of the tallest trees in the area, measuring 150 feet. And there was a sacred tulsi tree, a plant nearby. The distinct symbol they found on the bark of the tree was the plow. Balaram and his Leela with Krishna carries the plow. Hala. Haladhara. At about 8 feet, the symbol of the conch. 10 to 12 feet, the symbol of the lotus and the disc, the chakra, on the same tree. So that was Balaram's tree. Subhadra's tree was located in the backyard of Neelamani Sumtre's house. In his backyard. In the village of Malada. The tree was emitting a profound smell of sandalwood. It's a neem tree, don't forget. It's a neem tree. And at the foot of it, the deities of Jagannath, coincidentally, the deities of Jagannath, Subhadra, and Balaram were being worshipped at the base of this tree. So that had been going on. The tree was had been marked for the Daru, for the Daru Brahma, for God to use at some point. Daru is wood. But it hadn't been selected for that particular year. So because they knew it had been selected, they had been offering prayers there for quite some time. The most significant and interesting thing about the Daru of Subhadra of this Navakalevara is that there was a clear structural picture of the female parts where the two branches split out. So that tree was selected for her. And the Jagannath, the neem tree was near a burning ghat. That's what I wanted, a burning ghat. And this gigantic neem tree was very attractive, had a royal presence, luxurious growth. And it had a Somnath temple nearby, the Shiva temple, and a Gopinath temple on the other side. At the foot was a disproportionately huge anthill, at the foot of this tree, harboring numerous snakes for many years. At the very foot of the tree, the structure, you could find a club, Vishnu's club, on the bark. 4 feet above the ground, you could see the conch. On top of a branch about 20 feet up, the lotus was there, and close to it was the disc. And the tree had no parasites, and it was majestic in its disposition. So that became the tree for Jagannath. Once the tree is offered arti, and they do yajna, prayers, and they make sure the tree is clean of pests, or it serves all the stipulations, then they cut the tree down to be transported back to Puri to be carved and painted and prepared. And the Gutikodara, they cut a small hole in the heart area and they put in the soul substance, the Gutika. Gutika Udara. Udara, I think, means more like stomach, no? Udara. But here, they put it in the heart. And the soul substance is transferred in the dark of night. And even those transferring the soul substance from the old form to the new form are blindfolded. And the lights aren't on. And they do with special cloth. The soul substance is essentially Shalagram Shila. The stone form. Kurma has a nice Shalagram Shilas at his house. So that's what they do. They put in the soul substance. There's a great story about that. We don't have time. So then, any pieces of wood from the tree that are left behind, I think they bury them, but they try not to leave anything behind. No remnants. But these two guys went there and took a piece of one of the twigs or piece of wood, two young guys, and they thought, oh well, this is a special tree, this is going to be the Jagannath tree, we'll just take this piece of wood, we'll go home with it. Two guys on a motorcycle, you hardly see that in India, and off they went. And they turned around and there's two cobras following them. Wherever they went, the two cobras went too. Because you're not to take any of it. Well, they were freaked. They were afraid. They were scared. They turned around and brought the twig back. And it was subsequently buried. So, that's the Navaklevra. That's what's happening this year. So let me conclude. When Jagannath has his parade, chariot festival, the carts are huge. If you haven't seen them or seen photos of them or seen the video, they're huge and they're extremely heavy. It takes a lot of people to pull the ropes. Here, anybody can pull. In India, there's a certain people that are allowed to pull, I believe. Sometimes Lord Jagannath doesn't want to move and the cart stops. There's nothing wrong with the cart. Wheels are fine. Can't move. Won't move. Refuses to move. And until he decides he wants to go again, and sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it takes a few hours. Sometimes it takes more than a day. So, back in 1874, in Puri, Bhaktivinoda Thakur he's one of the acharyas in our line, had been posted as a judge doing legal work for the government in Puri. It goes from Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta, his guru is Bhaktisiddhanta, and his guru is Bhaktivinoda. Is that right? Did I miss somebody? Is Gaur Kishore Das Babaji in there? Bhaktivinoda is the father of Bhaktisiddhanta, so he was in that legal position, governmental position. He was working there, but he was also a great devotee. So it so happened that he had this child, Bimal Prasad, who became Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada's guru. His wife had that baby at that time. And when the baby was 6 months old, little Bimal, that was the time of the Rath Yatra festival in Puri. And as they travel, they chant and do kirtan, and, as they move through the street, through the grand road. The chariot of Jagannath stopped right in front of the front door of Bhaktivinoda's house, which was on the main road, and it wouldn't move. It didn't move for 3 days. 3 days, they couldn't move it. So during that time, Bhaktivinoda's wife brought out the little guy he was about 6 months old, holding him, showing him the deity of Jagannath up, way up on the chariot. Little Bhaktisiddhanta reached up like this, and the flower garland fell off the deity and landed on the child. Right there. So that was the official anointing of that child as a servant of Krishna, who would spread the chanting of Hare Krishna in the future, in the world. He didn't spread it in the world. He was the cause. Prabhupada did that. And the baby had not yet taken his first grains, the Anaprashana ceremony. This is a special sankskara or sacrament that you do with a baby. Maybe at 6 months, at 9 months, you give him the first grains. Before that, he doesn't eat any grain. And so then they fed him some Jagannath Prasadam. There was his Anaprashana, his first grain ceremony. So it all happened at the same time under Jagannath's determination. So That's some of the story of Lord Jagannath. Jai Jagannath. Any questions? Comments?
The title of today's lecture mentions the word Juggernaut.
Yeah. Juggernaut is the British anglicization of Jagannaut. And of course in English that's been inculcated into the language, and it means any unstoppable force of huge, immense size, and they normally refer to a lorry, don't they? We don't call that where I come from. They call it a semi-trailer. It's 18-wheel trailer, 16-wheel trailer. So, truck. It's a juggernaut. Because it is said that if you get run over by the wheels of the juggernaut cart, chariot, and you die, immediately you go to Vaikuntha. That's it. Finished. So they have to guard the wheels because people throw themselves under the wheels. Well, not everybody, a few people. They want to go. No more of this, please, please, let me out of here. So they have to guard the wheels so people don't buy themselves a ticket to Vaikuntha.